All right, everyone, welcome to this session. It's really my distinct privilege to welcome you to the next iteration of the Distinctiveness Conversations. And today we'll be focusing on the conversation between the TIM and STR divisions of the Academy of Management. The series was originally conceptualized by Michael Leiblein, who is here, and to whom I'll give the floor in just a second. And it's organized by Maka Moen, Philip Meyer Doyle, Richard Whittington, and myself, where each one of us organizes several of these events, where we really try to bring all the divisions across Academy of Management together with STR division, trying to better understand some of both the commonalities, some of the distinctive points, but really trying to build bridges and maybe bring scholars closer together, try to help cumulative body of knowledge within the management discipline and better share, somehow create a better shared understanding of what distinguishes, but also what links to different members from different divisions. And I'll give it over to Michael for a couple of words now.
I'm sorry, I was muted. I mean, that I should be done with that by now. So I'm Michael Leiblein. I'll just be a second here. This is his show with Henning and Rahul and Connie, but we have been running several of these sessions. Our intent has been to start thinking about how there are, and you can, I think, hopefully see them on the screen. So our intent is to have these eight, or maybe there might be a ninth conversation sometime later this summer, and then have this drive into the STR plenary, where we'll have some conversation about what, how we think about the field, how do we think about some of the fundamental questions, assumptions, theories, methods in the field, where there's interlinkages or opportunities, if you will, in the seams between different theories that are maybe popular in different areas of management scholarship. And so far, we've had some great conversations. I invite you to take a look at the SCR YouTube session, and I'm looking forward to shutting up and listening to these fine folks teach me some other things about the differences between strategy and innovation management. So, welcome.
Perfect. Thank you, Michael. So, again, today we're just met someone. Let me share my screen. So we are joined today by three wonderful scholars. So I wanted to really thank them for agreeing to be part of this panel. So we're joined by Connie Halfett, Rahul Kapoor, and Henning Piesunka. And I think that those are really perfect scholars to teach us more and share somehow their views on this potentially interlinkages between technology and innovation management and STR, right? Those are some of the founders of the field, or some of the scholars who really think deeply, I believe, about what the commonalities across fields are and how to build a body of knowledge that builds on prior work and allows us to talk with one another rather than past one another. So I've given them a short homework before this session, and I've asked them to focus on three questions in particular. The first one was, what do you see as distinguishing and often implicit assumptions in this two area of research? So I think that one of the important things is that when we write articles, when we create a piece of new theory or provide empirical evidence, we come with our priors, right? We come with our assumptions, and better understanding those that are often implicit, I think, is very important and allows us to create more bridges. The second question was the question whether it would be beneficial to the management and organizations community to have a common set of assumptions, to agree on a common set of assumptions, right? I think this may be relatively controversial, but I still wanted to ask you three to briefly touch upon these if you can. And finally, the question of interdisciplinarity. Is that the future of the field? Is that already the status quo? And most of our work is already to some extent interdisciplinary, and how could and how should we think about interdisciplinary of the interdisciplinarity of the management field. In particular, as I'm focusing on TIM and STR. So in terms of logistics, the session lasts 60 minutes, and I have asked each of our panelists to take turns and share their wisdom and provide short presentations with us, starting with Connie, then with Rahul, and then with Henning, and then we'll open it up to a more general discussion, questions and answers. If you have any comments, if you have any questions, please put them for now in the chat, and I'll try to aggregate them and maybe summarize them at the end. The session, just for your information, is recorded and later will be available on our YouTube channel. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Connie, and thank you very much for joining us. You are muted.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Hey, thanks for coming, everyone. It's great to see everyone. Unlike the first two speakers and maybe the last two, I don't have slides. I'm just going to chat. I'm going to make some high-level remarks. And then my guess is that Rahul and Henning will probably dig down into some of this. And I'm just going to go question by question that Tomas gave us for homework. So the first question was, you know, what are the distinguishing key, maybe implicit assumptions in each area, STR and TIM? And I think sometimes people think of these assumptions as sort of research assumptions, like, you know, are people rational? Are they boundedly rational? Are they irrational? But I'm going to think about assumptions in a slightly different way, as in what's important, right? Like what's important to STR versus what's important in TIM. And the reason I'm going to do that is I think in terms of sort of behavioral assumptions about how, you know, organizations operate, both TIM and STR are highly eclectic. You know, it's a range from totally, you know, barely rational to fully rational and everything in between, right? And I think that's a strength. But I don't think that necessarily, from my perspective, is not the largest distinguishing feature of research in the two divisions. What I think is different is that, I mean, in both divisions, there's an interest in innovation and technology, right? In TIM, of course, this is the central focus, whereas in STR, it is a big focus, but there are many others, right? So if we think about this, so in TIM, and I'm going to generalize hugely here, like what are the central tendencies, right? So not every piece of research follows what I'm about to say, but in TIM, I think there's more of a sense that technology is a driver of what goes on in organizations, right? Whereas in STR, technology and innovation might be more of a means to an end, to a strategic end. You innovate, you know, because the firm needs to change, because, you know, it'll improve performance, things like this, right? So there might be a slightly different focus. And what that means is in TIM, I see more of a focus on the technology per se. Like, what is the technology? What does it do? How does it operate? And therefore, what does this mean, right? And many of the outcomes are at the technology level in some sense. Like, you know, there's a huge literature on patenting, right? And sometimes patents are outcomes, right? And studies about the details of patents, right? So I think this is much more detailed than what you might see in a typical strategy paper, right? You know, so in STR, you know, a technological outcome like a patent might actually be an input to other things that the firm is doing, some kind of initiative it's taking on, like some kind of innovations, right, that go beyond the patent, or some kind of firm performance. I mean, certainly there are strategy articles that have patents as outcomes, but sometimes they're like a proxy for firm performance. They're not necessarily the goal in and of itself. Whereas I think in TIM, there's more of an interest in these technology outcomes in and of themselves. So I think it's a different emphasis. And I would give one example of like university patenting, right? You know, TIM, there's an enormous number of studies in TIM of this as a phenomenon, right? Whereas I think in STR, the interest is more on the impact of the access to university research and what this can do for the firm, right? And so in STR, you might see much more links to things like, you know, alliances, which are a classic corporate strategy topic, where that might be less of the point of the article in a TIM article, even though it might come up. Another example would be modularity, where TIM, you know, huge number of studies on modularity, where it's a lot of details of what, where, when, why. Whereas in STR, there's a lot of more studies of the impact of modularity on other firm strategy and strategy outcomes. So I think it's a matter of degree, but in TIM, I think there might be less interest in overall firm outcomes. And in STR, there might be less interest in sort of the technologies per se. So that's kind of my take on that. So in terms of whether it's beneficial to have a common set of assumptions, so translating it to what I'm talking about, meaning a common approach to what's important and why it matters among the two divisions, I actually know that wouldn't be from my point of view, I don't think this is necessary or maybe even helpful, because I think one approach can inform the other, right? And so let me go back to my example of modularity again. You know, I've learned an enormous amount from people like Carlos Baldwin and Stefano Bersoni. I mean, the Carlos and Kim Clark's book, Design Rule, had a major impact in strategy research. I mean, it's hard to overstate that. But I don't view a lot of that book is not actually classic strategy research, right? What I think it does is a lot of what we know about modularity informs our understanding about what makes some firms and some industries more innovative than others and why firms differ and why this matters, which is the classic strategy question. And this point, in this case, in my example, having to do with whether firms use modular technologies or not, right? And I think that this, of course, is hugely beneficial in STR research, right? Understanding modularity, because then you can think about the consequences for innovation and firm performance. And you know, like in my work and Rahul's work, we've thought about the strategy question of why don't we always see modularity and under what conditions, right? Well, that would be hard to ask without having all the TIM research on modularity, right? What I do think would be helpful is maybe the reverse. Like, what could TIM scholars learn from STR research? I don't see as much research going the other direction, right? How do some of these strategy issues feed back to technology development and outcomes? I don't see as much of that, right? Obviously, there is some. So I think that would be one key thing that I would advocate for. I think we might all learn more. And this feeds, that last comment feeds right into the last question about the interdisciplinarity of research between TIM and STR. You know, is this the way we should go in the future? Is it already a reality? And I think, you know, to a large extent, it's already a reality, right? I remember seeing some years ago, some statistic that something like 50% of TIM members were also in STR or something like that. So I don't know what the number is, but it's a big overlap, right? But I think there's more opportunity for interdisciplinary work, including in emerging topics. So here, you know, if we're going to say, God, what's one of the big, huge things? How about AI? Right? This crosses, you know, technology and strategy, right? So I think that if you're going to study from a strategy point of view, if you're going to study the strategic aspects of AI, you really need to understand the technology. There's just no way. You're going to make so many mistakes otherwise. And so I think this is where TIM can be hugely helpful. And also the trends in technology development. I feel like with AI, like we're always 2 years behind, right? So, you know, this would be hugely helpful. And then I think also it's not only for STR researchers to understand the technology of AI and what's going on, but the reverse, right? The strategies that firms are employing are going to affect the technology development in AI. And that's the reverse, you know, direction that I'm suggesting would be really important. So let me stop there. I just think there are a lot of opportunities for sort of more cross-fertilization between the two areas and, you know, more opportunities for people to work together across the division. So that's what I had in mind.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Cody, so much. And I think we'll come back to this, to both this question of technology as a DV versus technology as an IV later, but and also potentially some asymmetry across knowledge flows between divisions. But I wanted now to turn it over to Rahul. But thank you, Connie, for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Tomas, for having me in this exciting panel. And I think if most of you want to grab a coffee or a tea, or you just want to mute your speaker for the next 10 minutes, feel free to do so, because it's going to start sounding like a broken record. I'm going to, without coordinating much with Cody, I'm going to end up essentially replicating most of what she has said. And it's, you know, maybe it reinforces how we are thinking about this. As somebody who sits in the strategy area within the management department and who has spent, you know, most of his research doing work on technology strategy, this is a very relevant conversation that I have lived through most of my academic career. In fact, as a former chair of the Technology and Innovation Management Division, and as Connie alluded to, STR is the highest in terms of overlap in membership. So, you know, while we're talking about distinctiveness, I mean, there is really a lot of coherence between these two divisions. In fact, oftentimes when I work on a paper submission for the Academy of Management Division, it's almost a coin toss. Do I submit it to STR or I submit to TIM? And so I do think there is just so much synergy around these domains. So I think I'll just, like Connie, you know, following Thomas's marching orders and maybe reframing it, not in terms of just key assumptions, but just the way we go about doing research within STR and TIM. I think from my perspective, STR division, right, or strategic sort of management perspective, very explicit about firm level heterogeneity as a starting point, right? That's the basis of conversation. And that heterogeneity gets evaluated, explored through issues of capabilities and resources, through issues of strategic choices and decisions. And of course, with a DV of performance outcome as a key aspect of that scholarship. Tim, as Connie said, you know, it starts with the technological context. And you know, in my work and in others, right, we look at an evolutionary aspect of that context in terms of over time, you know, multiple technologies, multiple actors, multiple systems. But then this architectural piece, whether it starts with modularity or you know, at a higher level as an ecosystem. And so there's sort of two ways that I've thought about context. One has an aspect of time, one has an aspect of system. And again, as Connie alluded to, you know, innovation is one of the key anchors of value creation within Technology and Innovation Management Division. Strategy, you know, that's bundled in other aspects of value creation and value capture as well. Method, you know, I think it's important to think about methodological nuances between the two domains. You know, strategy tends to be, the measures are reasonably well institutionalized in terms of how we measure performance, how we measure decisions, how we measure knowledge and capabilities, of course, the harder one to measure. Technology Innovation Management Division, more eclectic. I think more context-specific patents has been used as an important measure of innovation inputs and outputs. But most of the work that I engage with and I do myself tends to be very industry specific, technology specific, deep field studies, trying to understand the mechanisms, trying to measure them as clearly as possible, but not as much cumulativeness that I think you see in strategy. Always a good idea, you know, to integrate. Yeah, I think I'm a huge fan of that. And Connie, you know, I think again I'll underscore that. I think integration should not come at the cost of remaining distinctive in terms of getting some precision. And I give you an example of my work, right? So the two SMJ papers I was thinking about that shows, you know, maybe a small sample size of the value of integration, right? So I have a paper that looks at entry timing advantage with Ron Adner. It came out in SMJ a while ago. And while the field of strategy has talked about timing advantages and entry order advantages for a long time, that paper said, let's bring the technology context and superimpose that on timing issues and think about the ecosystem as a basis of value creation. And only when you bring the ecosystem basis of value creation and the entry timing dynamics across firms, you can explain entry timing advantages or first mover advantages in strategies, right? So thinking about strategic differences, but also technological context. Another area of research with Nathan Furr at INSEAD, Henning's colleague, looked at the solar power industry. And you know, Technology Innovation Management Division has talked about a dominant design as a very important evolutionary process, start of the industry, a lot of experimentation, a lot of innovation, then a dominant design emerges, it corresponds with exit, and then a process of incremental innovation, but didn't quite engage with firm-level heterogeneity or firm-level strategies as well. And so that area of research says, let's not assume this is all technologically deterministic or there's an evolutionary process. There are firm-level decisions that are shaping the emergence of the dominant design and the outcomes as well. So I think the way I've gone about my work, while it wasn't explicitly designed to bring Tim and Estia together, but the phenomenon was very much along the lines of, let's think about firm-level heterogeneity. Let's think about whether it's capabilities or decisions or outcomes, but let's engage the technological context in terms of evolutionary processes and ecosystems as well. And, you know, AI is top of the mind for everybody, whether you're in the classroom or you're thinking about research. And as Scotty said, I think that's the best illustration of the value that a firm-level sensibility and a technology-level sensibility are so synergistic to understand how AI is going to be affecting firms, industries, professions, jobs, and many more. And if you just focus on the technology context without understanding the firms, the organizations, you are missing a big piece of that phenomenon. And if you're just focusing on firms without quite understanding whether it's large language models or other types of algorithms or hardware versus software, you're missing a big piece of the phenomenon, right? So where I sit in the management department, you know, we embrace phenomenon-based interdisciplinary scholarship. It's problem-focused as opposed to discipline-focused. And I do think AI and, you know, what we are seeing around us today, whether it's in the classroom or outside, is a perfect phenomenon that we can engage with, where the synergies between STR and TIM are probably going to be at a very prominent display. So those are some initial thoughts. I'm happy to take any questions and get your reactions as well. And let me pass it over to Henning, who I believe have slides and will give you something with a lot more structure.
Thank you. Thank you, Rahul. And again, to all the participants, please feel free to use the chat window or chat to enter your questions, comments. After Henning's presentation, we'll have time for a general discussion. So please don't hesitate to give us inputs into that discussion, to give us the technology that we'll then use in the process of generating the discussion.
Awesome, thank you. So these are two hard acts to follow. I will nevertheless kind of give it my try. In terms of what you take away, I like what Rahul said in the beginning, kind of feel free to switch off the audio. In general, here's my general take. If there's something you find interesting, just kind of steal it. The more you can steal, basically, the better. Stealing means you can just use whatever I say and use it for yourself. There might also be stuff that inspires you where you find, oh, this is helpful. This is something I can work with. There might be stuff what I call an oyster, that something is interesting to you. It might not yet be like a pearl, but it's an oyster that could turn into a pearl and maybe it is useful to you at some point. There's going to be plenty of stuff where you're going to be have discomfort, where you're going to be disagree with, and Tomasz is going to get a bunch of emails. How could you put Henning on this? So this is how this, these are kind of the four kind of categories to think about this. Obviously, I don't expect it to be like a sponge to suck up everything, but I hope there are going to be a few nuggets for each of you. So I took an approach which is a little similar to what Connie said, and I asked myself the question, like, not in terms of assumptions and kind of, oh, who's a boundedly rational actor, but like, what is actually important here? And I did something that I thought a little bit about. Okay, very often our research to a certain degree kind of reflects the real world, because you see, I had such a hard time differentiating STR and Tim. And then I wondered why that is, because I felt like when I grew up academically, this was much, much easier. There was like James Utterbeck and there was like Michael Porter and people like that. And so I found it much easier, but I found it's gotten much harder. And so I wondered why this is. And I kept on thinking about Mark Andreessen, software has eaten the world. You see, like technology is just in many ways everywhere. In a certain degree, technology is a little bit like saffron. It really colors everything. And then I thought about like, prominent people, right? You see, like it used to be that we were focused on like Warren Buffett's and he invested in Coca-Cola and Railway and in these kind of industries, positioning, capacity, super important, right? And nowadays it's more about Mark Andreessen and he invests in browsers and cloud computing and online communication in crypto and so on, right? Go away from the investor side, right? You see, like 20, 25 years ago, it was all about Jack Welch, right? How do you downsize? How do you financially engineer? How do you kind of invest, divest and stuff like this, right? But this is a little bit, you know, this is a little bit the past, no offense to say, but right, the recent book on GE on power failure, nowadays it's all about Elon Musk, right? Online payments, solar, Tesla, rockets, Twitter, AI, you name it. A little bit. And I think with it, and you see, Rahul just alluded to this, right? Think about all the industries which have emerged and which are central nowadays. None of these industries, by the way, existed in the early 1970s, right? Not for semiconductors, but semiconductors, computer, biotech, the internet, and AI. So the world has to a certain degree changed. And so it's only natural, right? You see, like if you think about strategy, right? The purpose of strategy in many ways, right? Bringing it back down to one dependent variable, is performance, right? Now, these are the 10 firms with the largest market capitalization in 2021. And you have a hard time, you know, like Berkshire Hathaway might not be a tech company, but any other is really a tech company in this, right? So if you study strategy, if you're interested in performance, you almost have to study tech, right? I put here the NASDAQ index and the Dow Jones, and you see like, there's a vast difference in how well these have developed. So the world has just shifted a little bit towards technologies. And you see, like beyond just saying like technology has gotten more important, I think there are actually very important implications about this. You've all seen these kind of charts, right? Diffusion patterns get faster, technology life cycles get shorter. If you haven't seen them, you should read more of Rahul's work, okay? So the thing about it, but this has enormous implications, okay? So the speed of diffusion of new staffing has increased and the periods, right, between different kind of cycles has decreased enormously. And it used to be that as a company, I could be very focused on like positioning, oh, where do I put which plant and stuff like this? How do I differentiate price-wise? But nowadays it's very much about how do I jump from one curve basically onto another? So I come back to like, oh, has software, why software is eating the world? And in a certain way, I make the provocative argument here that Tim is eating a little bit the world, okay? So Tim is a little bit kind of encroaching on other kind of parts of the world. In the academic world, right? You see, to me, the most important thing about Tim, and totally feel free to disagree with this, this was just like the one take I could focus on, was it's very much focused on novelty. It's very much focused on like, what is the next big thing? And that actually results in fundamentally different things, right? If you think about Tudorians of like the field, right? Like Michael Porter very much focused on like positioning much more in a stable world to Clay Christensen, much more focused on renewal, right? You see, think about the work on like entry deterrence. I've grown up with Jean Tirole and Louis Cabral, and it was like, oh, you do penetration prices, somebody enters the market, you lower the prices, right? But this is very different in a kind of tech-driven world, right? Suddenly I have to adjust my business model. I have to adjust a new kind of technology. The moment you look at what Ramon Casasnios Marang and Pancho Gamma would have done, right? It's really a kind of tech-driven story. And the assumption, how I think about strategy, is suddenly very, very different in a kind of tech-driven world, right? Look, if you haven't read this book, you obviously should read this book. It's very important. It tells you a lot about the intersection of technology and strategy, how you kind of need to take this into account. I would even argue there are different theoretical foundations, okay? So on the one hand, we have like Stiegler very much like focusing on positioning. And then Tim, I would say, is to a certain degree anchored in Hayek, not generally the Austrian School of Economics, but very focused in like, where's information coming from? How do you deal with uncertainty? These kind of questions, okay? So look, there's great work at the intersection. In many ways, strategies papers become technology papers, right? And my personal favorite example, not just because he's here, is Ron Aidner and Rahul Kapoor's work on this. It's very hard for me to tell whether this is a technology paper or whether this is a strategy paper. I didn't have the time, but I thought about doing like a survey for fun of it to say like, who of you is like a tech scholar and who's like a strategy scholar, right? Like Connie had already mentioned Kallis Baldwin, right? It's hard to kind of pinpoint. I agree with you, it's more of a Tim book, but it's enormous strategy implication. And this kind of, this focus on novelty and kind of these different assumption in terms of information form, this brings me to like a separate point here. It's not just the focus on novelty, but I think what's very important is there's also to a certain degree, a different focus, a different unit of analysis in TIM a little bit. So, and this is, you see, like I always teach my student this example of penicillin. So penicillin actually pops up 1,500 before Christ, okay? A Persian shoulders, then it pops up. You know the story, okay? So 1979, Fleming discovers antibiotic, he publishes a paper, but then nothing happens, okay? This should, by the way, give you a good feeling if you publish scientific papers. He discovers penicillin in a scientific paper and nothing happens, okay? But then what actually happens, right? Is suddenly now Howard Florey comes in, a team at Oxford, and he brings together now the military, the industry, science, and stuff like that. And this really kind of gets penicillin to rise. But very notable here, the unit of analysis to explain this is not the firm anymore. It's really like the network of academia, military. Connie had actually mentioned this, right? Connie had pointed out the university kind of practice transfer. And I think that is something that Tim is very good at, to think a little bit more in systems in that thing, to ask the question, where does it pop up, right? The Second World War was incredibly important for the emergence of penicillin. There was an incredible demand, right? Think of Ron Aidner's work on like shift in the demand shape, right? In the demand landscape. So in many ways, I think this is also what you see in the work, new kind of units, the network as the locus of innovation. That is the word that Woody Powell uses in the fantastic kind of ASQ, where it kind of, you know what, this innovation really pops up in the network, right? Think about the work by Lars Bo Jeppesen and Karim Lakhani. It's really the focus on the crowd. This is, I would say, is very classical TIM work. That is not so much strategy. It's really much more of a question, where does actually innovation come up? I have played a little bit in this field. How do kind of crowds succeed in kind of popping up with new stuff, right? Ron Aidner's book, even more so than the most recent book, I would say, right? And I'm putting up these two definitions here out of Ron's recent book, about what a value proposition is and what an ecosystem is, very much in anchored his work with Rahul. Very much the focus is not anymore on the single firm. Of course, the single firm wants to make a profit, but with a very clear understanding of where does innovation come from, where does it pop up? And I think that's an important kind of part in this whole enterprise. Now, how can the two contribute to one another? Okay, one thing which I think is super important, and this is, I think I'm a little bit aligned here with Rahul and Connie, is you can reflect on TOM topics through through strategy, right? So look, Connie had pointed out there's all this work on patents, right? But then, you know, I think they're very rich strategic implications. I very much like this work by Oliver Alexi, Jerry George, Eamon Salter, on like, how do you selectively reveal your innovations? How do you kind of then build an ecosystem and stuff like that, right? Rita Katila and Eric Chen, where do you actually search relative to your competitor, right? You see, like, this is very much kind of TOM inspired by strategy. If I look for innovation, I need to look at where other people effectively search, okay? Now I go a little bit in the other direction, and this is something I think is very important. Sometimes you see a very important question is like, where's the competition in all of this, right? Tomasz kind of pointed me to this. Do TOM ideas actually work in isolation? So I give you, this is a recent paper I have with Abhishek and and it looks at like, how good are you in crowdsourcing when there are competitors, right? The NASA can do crowdsourcing, but can you actually do crowdsourcing when there are competitors around? Because you might not actually have access to contributors who self-select into this. The other way around, you might also kind of think about how does technology actually inspire current STR debates? I don't think, you see, Connie, you pointed this out very nicely. There's a huge overlap, but maybe it's interesting to look at the parts where there's not so much overlap. You see, I was wondering, for example, think about non-market strategies, right? There's an enormous amount of non-market strategies. And what is the role of this, right? We're always complaining about people in Congress who don't understand technology, but this is something we might complain about, but for the organizations, it's actually the daily reality, right? So how do you deal with this, right? Identity and technology, what is the intersection there, right? Corporate purpose and technology, right? I have the pleasure of visiting Wharton here. Like, what does Claudine Gartenberg have actually kind of to contribute to the debate on TIM? And so even kind of topics where TIM is not present, which are kind of hardcore STR, could kind of benefit from this intersection. Thank you.
Thank you, Henning. This was super interesting, insightful. It's also in terms of rate of slide per second. I think that that was one of the highest I've seen. But thank you so much. I do want to start the conversation. And again, I haven't seen much happening in the chat. If you do have a question, please feel free to raise your virtual hand or just post something in the window. But I did want to maybe kick off the conversation with this question. It's a distinction or the term or the tension that came up in all three of your presentations, but this focus on value creation versus focus on value capture, right? And to what extent can we think in today's world about studying value creation without looking at technology and without looking at a broader system or ecosystem of players that jointly contribute and are interdependent in value creation, as opposed to the more traditional STR focus, which historically has been on value capture. But we also in STR, I do think that we're seeing a shift towards more focus on value drivers of value creation, and potentially somehow away from the exclusive focus on value capture. So how do you think about them? Is it that maybe TIM is more concerned about value creation while STR has been more concerned with value capture? Do you see that being reversed, or is it a fake dichotomy?
I can jump in. I think that's a great anchor, Tomasz. You know, I was thinking about it as you were laying out that thread. You know, David Thies's, you know, seminal piece, of course, on complementary assets, came out in Research Policy, and it was all about value capture. And you know, David has openly acknowledged that paper, you know, maybe it would have worked better in SMJ than in Research Policy, because it clearly had a focus on value capture. And I do think, and Henning alluded to this very clearly, that I think TIM domain has focused on issues of novelty, has focused on issues of innovation as a value creation, and value capture has not been the primary object of inquiry, if you will. And I think whether we've talked about appropriability regimes as one way to think about value capture, but in a very aggregate context, right? What we have missed is embracing some of what we do in the strategy field, thinking about competition, which has mostly background as opposed to foreground, thinking about different challenges of value capture. I think the business model research, you know, is clearly pushing those conversations where we're not just thinking about value creation, but also value capture. Again, we need to get some conceptual clarity around this. So I do think that's an open opportunity. I think the TIM folks need to embrace competition much more explicitly. And then I think if you are you know, a strategy scholar, value creation should be the upper bound for how much value you can capture. And I think by just focusing on value capture without understanding how value gets created in the first place, I think there is an opportunity there to complete the picture as well.
Yeah, I could add to that. Actually, I agree with Rahul. And I think actually, I mean, I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it, but I'd say the much of my research actually on value creation, not value capture. Why? Well, you can't capture value unless you create it, right? And also maybe I'm just more interested in that. I think in addition to thinking about how competition affects the development of technology and the outcomes, corporate strategy, right, also has a huge effect, right? And this isn't nearly as prominent in TIM research, right? Because firms are making decisions that involve multiple businesses, and that's going to affect the development of technology, right? And the outcomes and all the details of how they do things. And so again, this is another example of how can SDR issues inform TIM research, right? I mean, it's kind of like, you could think there's like like if you take the spectrum of what topics TIM scholars could investigate, there's kind of a hole, right? Where the sort of the strategy decisions might lead back to technology, right? And then there's also the hole in SDR, right? Where we need to know much more about the technologies, and Henning's lovely presentation made this extremely clear.
I'm gonna add just one like very specific thing, which I think is particularly interesting to much about your questions. I think beyond our focus as researchers on like value capture and value creation, I think it's interesting to wonder who in the ecosystem is actually focused on value capture and value creation. And how do you deal with actors who have very different interests in that, right? You see, open source is just an important reality in software markets. And you see, Microsoft wants to profit. There's no question about it. But Sam Altman at OpenAI seems to be more focused on kind of creating a technology for the world. So I wonder if we, I think it might be interesting rather than just the strategy scholars to say like, oh, you're focused on value creation, I'm focused on value capture, to actually ask the question, what are these actors actually doing? What are these actors are actually focused on? And what does this actually mean? You see, like, I'm thinking a lot about what ChatGPT does for Google these days. And in part, I think Microsoft is actually happy that you can't put advertising in, because they're saying like, we are just ruining Google at this point. We don't actually worry about actually like, if we can't get this profitable as a search engine, guess what? We didn't have a profitable search engine for the last 15 years, right? So we are at this point not focused on our value capture. We are focused on the lack of value capture of somebody else, right? So I think asking a little bit, what are these actors actually focused on is a very important question in this debate, beyond our insular debate. What are we focused on, but what are the actors are focused on?
And I would just one other piece I wanted to echo, because I think that deserves to be echoed. It's a really, in my view, an important untapped domain for all of us, which is what Connie alluded to. Corporate strategy comes to TIM. I think Henning showed, you know, the most valuable companies in the world by market cap. they all, you know, technology companies, as Henning noted, and they all have platforms and ecosystems, but none of them are single business companies. They are all diversified multi-business companies, and over time they have added and divested different businesses over time. So, and I think to me, you know, thinking about how our existing perspectives of corporate development and strategy lay on issues of digital platforms and ecosystems and shape, you know, both value creation and capture for the focal actors in the platform or actors outside, I think it's there at least a dozen dissertations, if not more, in that piece.
Perfect. Thank you. This is super, super interesting. I also I think that both of these key issues here could lead to a completely new almost subfield or definitely multiple dissertations and streams of research, but also understanding better what actually the actors, what are the incentives of the actors without putting a prior, right, that it is either value creation or value capture. There's also a question in the chat. And again, to everyone else, please put up your virtual hand if you do want to ask a question or share your opinions or make a comment. There's a question from Eldor in the chat, who's working on technological uncertainties affecting social network strategies. I wonder if we can think of technological uncertainty as a common construct for SGR and TIM.
I can try answering that. In the paper that Henning was overly generous, I think showing it a couple of times in his presentation, so this is the paper with Ron Adner in 2010 in SMJ. We separate technological uncertainty from behavioral uncertainty, and the main premise is, you know, behavioral uncertainty is actor specific. You're working with a supplier or a buyer, and there's some behavioral considerations in terms of incentives and incomplete contracts and what have you. But then there's a technological uncertainty, which is, you know, to what extent this technological solution is going to be adopted. Is it going to achieve the performance level that would, you know, meet the minimum performance threshold? So I do think, you know, there are different flavors of uncertainty, and depending on your research question and the mechanism that you are focusing on, it would be good to be clear about what aspect of the uncertainty that you're focusing on.
I'm just going to add like one of my favorite sayings about social networks, because it seems relevant. Social networks are a little bit like an insurance. You invest in them when you don't need them. So with respect to Eldor's question, I actually found that helpful, right? With respect to like, how do technologies and uncertainties affect social networks, right? I mean, if you're now right now at Microsoft, somebody who could put like $1 billion into OpenAI a few years ago must be like the hero there right now. Right, you can think of this as like, hey, I'll manage the uncertainty to a certain degree, or invest in these things before you need them. So absolutely, yeah, I think it's a fantastic question, and I think it's actually something that plays out in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Actually, by the way, we have a person who might have a much better answer than Connie, Thomas, or Henning. I could give, which is Michael. Michael has used measures of uncertainty in his work, and Michael, patent volatility, how does that resonate?
I'm not going to say at this session. I'm a little curious about the patent measures, but I do think I think that I think Rahul's being kind. I've been thinking a little bit about portfolio diversification versus other forms of dealing with, I think a little bit about portfolio diversification versus switching options and the different forms of uncertainty that might be tied to those models, as well as with Hart Posen and some others, thinking about different forms of uncertainty that we might think in a real option model or a feedback learning Bayesian learning model. So I guess my quick response would be thinking through the theory that you have in the back of your mind when developing that measure of uncertainty, and then seeing and comparing, sort of like what we're doing in this session, whether that measure, the measure you've chosen, is well aligned with the theory you're thinking about, or in this session, whether the measures and questions we're asking are well aligned with the theories underlying the strategic management or innovation management work. So I really liked what Henning said about sort of the focus on entry deterrence versus renewal. That really resonated with me. I'll close with sort of a question, if I think there's time here. I heard a lot about aggregation amongst the three of you, sort of different levels of analysis. Excuse me, I heard a lot about different levels of analysis, firm versus technology. I'm curious if anybody would comment about the aggregation mechanisms that you think might be operating when we think about setting a strategy and then how that influences or provides core guidance for technology, or making a technological commitment and how that might, you know, aggregate to the firm level through something like a portfolio effect or some other effect. But that's after everybody else's questions are addressed.
Are there any other questions? If not, we can take it. Then we can somehow we can let you, Michael. Yes, Joanna.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for this wonderful discussion. I just have a follow-up question on the value creation and value capturing part. So it looks like so far the interest has primarily been on those firms that are aiming at value creation or like profit maximization. And I wonder if firms that are like hybrid, namely those that are having mixed logics or mixed incentives, are something of interest to the TIM scholars. Thank you.
So this is what I tried to briefly allude to at the end when I said, like, what is the intersection between corporate purpose, for example, and technology? I think it's enormously important. And the world will in the near future actually kind of face some very important question, right? What do we do with certain kind of technologies? And it's unclear, right, whether like profit orienting firms are like the best entities to deal with those. So I think looking at that, Rahul said there's a dozen dissertations in that. I find one dissertation already very scary. So a dozen dissertations sounds really scary to me, but I fully agree with him. There's an enormous potential kind of in studying these kind of questions. What are the orientations of these kind of actors and how will it affect the technology? So coming back to what Connie said, how does kind of the strategy affect the technology? I think is incredibly interesting, right? Coming back, and Connie had alluded to this, right? Carlos has a paper on Netscape. How does the technology architecture of these browsers kind of look like? You know, how is the strategy actually reflected, right? How's the strategy reflected in the technological product? I think it will, by the way, also have a huge kind of method implication for us. Where do we get the data on these kind of technologies for, right? We are all using kind of ChatGPT, but we don't know how the inside, this is a black box for researchers, right? And we'll have a lot of black boxes in the near future, right? I adore Rahul's work on semiconductors, but I think it would be impossible to do the same thing on AI at this point, because he just doesn't get the same kind of information on the algorithms. They're not like patents, they're not trademarks and stuff like that. So I think these kind of questions are very important and also will present new challenges for us.
I just to add to what Henning said, I completely agree with him. I think it's a great line of research. You know, maybe slightly tangential, but I think still relevant. So if you look at all of the discussions and excitement around ESG as a general, you know, frame for organizations. How did it all come about? You know, going back to World Economic Forum, ESG was thought of as a way for companies to be more economically efficient, right? So oftentimes, the things that we think about as a logic that's moving away from profit maximizing actor, even ESG, focus on environment and sustainability and you know, social and issues of governance, are fundamentally issues that should make every firm, you know, more generate and capture more rents over time. So I do think, you know, as Henning said, there is an opportunity here one way you can shift from a firm that's focusing on just, you know, profits to social and economic. But the other flip side, which I think is even a bigger opportunity, where what we have framed issues around non-economic are actually complementing the economic streams and economic cash flows as well. And thinking about that more holistically, I think would really do justice to the field.
I give it, John, let me just kind of give an example of a paper I've been working on. These are takeovers in the context of open source. And it's really interesting. Why would you buy something that is openly in the public? And the answer you often see is because you need to protect it. You're worried that somebody else takes it down. So it's publicly available, it's free. But at the same time, how do you grasp of it? And for a lot of companies, the funny thing about it is, in my sample, about 50% of the company kind of take them out. They want to destroy it. And 50% of them actually want to protect it, right? So these are really like, there you see it kind of playing out, like actors, or like they want to have the people, but it's collateral damage. So looking at these kind of people who have different kind of motivations, I think it's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I hate to be this person, but we are one minute over time. So I think we're going to close this session. I did want to advertise an upcoming session on May 3rd, which will be a distinctiveness dialogue between STR and the IB division that's organized by MACA. So I strongly encourage you to attend this session. I think it's going to be wonderful. And with that, we have, unfortunately, I think, lost Connie along the way. But with that, I really wanted to thank Connie, Rahul, and Henning for this session, for being with us, and for sharing your thoughts on that. And I hope that we have all learned something today. I definitely did.
Thank you very much, Tomas. Thank you. It's a great session.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tomas. Thanks to all the
audience. Thank you, Tomas.